Hello, podcasters. It is Friday. We've got the future of guns and gun control and how ridiculous this is. I'd like to introduce you to something called the 3D printer. Also, Bill O'Reilly is here. Climate change with a town hall. It just won't end. Walmart and the NRA. Amazon, Apple, Google. Kind of an argument, really, between Stu and I with Bill O'Reilly. He thinks that the Democrats or the Republicans have to compromise on the Second Amendment or they're going to lose. I don't understand how you compromise on the Bill of Rights. We also have Dave Rubin on, really fascinating. Joining the Blaze TV is Dave Rubin. We talked to him about how L.A. is changing and the dynamics of politics. Also, he's known as an atheist, but he now, after traveling with Jordan Peterson, says, I'm really not. Jordan Peterson. I'm really not an atheist. Jordan Peterson made a lot of sense to me. And the taste test we've all been waiting for. The Impossible Whopper. All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
It was September 25th, 2017. Stephen Paddock checked into a room on the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel in Las Vegas. He had 10 range bags full of guns and ammunition. And 6 days later, he opened fire on the people on Route 91 at the Harvest Music Festival. He killed 85 people. He wounded 851 others in what is the deadliest mass shooting committed by one person in U.S. history. And then he killed himself. When police investigated, they found 23 rifles and one handgun, 14 223 caliber AR-15 type rifles, 8 308 AR-10 type rifles, 1 308 caliber bolt action rifle, and 1 38 caliber revolver. On the kitchen counter next to his hotel room key, there were 4 credit cards. Now, I want you to listen to Andrew Ross Sorkin. He's certain that there is a correlation between mass shootings and the credit cards. Listen.
After Parkland, the shooting in Parkland, and trying to look at the role that banks and credit cards play in these things, I really decided to take a deep dive into this. The article is called Devastating Arsenals Bought with Plastic and Nary a Red Flag. It is a New York Times investigation that looks at mass shootings, every single major mass shooting in America since Virginia Tech in 2007. And it really reveals how credit cards have become such a crucial part of the planning of these massacres in a way that I have to say I did not even appreciate myself.
So, you know, he is becoming much more of an activist than a reporter. He wrote the article, How Banks Unwittingly Finance Mass Shootings, in the New York Times. We have some problems with the article, and I'll get to those here in just a second. But let me look at his point first. He starts by pointing out that there have been 13 shootings that killed 10 or more people in the last decade. And in at least 8 of them, the killers financed their attacks using credit cards. Virginia Tech in 2007, Binghamton in 2009, Fort Hood 09, Aurora 12, San Bernardino 2015, Orlando 16, Sutherland Springs 17, Las Vegas 17. He points out that over the course of 8 months before the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, that shooting, the shooter opened 6 new credit card accounts. Just 12 days before the shooting, he spent $26,000 on a Sig Sauer MCX223 caliber rifle, a Glock 17 9mm semi-automatic pistol, and several large magazines, thousands of rounds of ammunition, and a $7,500 ring for his wife that he bought on a jewelry store credit card. Before then, he had spent only $1,500 a month on average. Now, the difference is so dramatic that he panicked. According to Sorkin, just 2 days before the shooting, frantically, he was searching Google for credit card unusual spending. Credit card reports, all 3 bureaus, FBI, and why banks stop your purchases. Now, the shooter in Aurora, Colorado, the movie theater shooter, spent $11,000 on guns and ammunition, and that was all on a credit card. The issue has revealed a split among the banks and credit card companies. On one side, there are companies that support monitoring as a form of public safety. Following the shooting in Parkland, Florida, Citigroup adopted a new code of conduct for gun dealers and manufacturers the bank does business with. It requires retailers to impose age restrictions on gun sales. Wouldn't have helped. CEO Michael Corbat said the policy is intended to preserve the rights of responsible gun owners like myself, while relying on best sales practices to keep firearms out of the wrong hands. Now, the new policy does not restrict Citigroup customers from using the company's cards for gun purchases. Bank of America took a similar approach when they stopped giving loans to manufacturers of certain kinds of semi-automatic rifles sold to civilians. Overwhelmingly, though, the banks and credit card companies have refused to take part in any sort of monitoring. This week, the New York Times is reporting that's because of conservative pressure. Wells Fargo, the CEO there, said, "I don't think it's a good idea for banks to decide what products and services Americans can buy. It shouldn't be up to me, to us. We don't decide that. It should be up to the folks following the laws and the folks making the decision." Wells Fargo's CFO, John Shrewsberry, said the best way to make progress on these issues is through political and legislative process. Visa said, "We don't believe Visa should be in the position of setting restrictions on the sale of lawful goods or services. Asking Visa or other payment networks to arbitrate what legal goods can be purchased sets a dangerous precedent." Spokesperson from MasterCard echoed that sentiment. Privacy of people's purchasing decisions belongs to them. It's cardholder independence. Jeremy Stein, an economics professor at Harvard University, rightly points out, if the banks decide no longer to do business with gun manufacturers, they would need to look more closely at customers' information. And by doing so, they'd be getting into the same issues Facebook and others have had problems with. So even if banks and credit card companies agreed to start monitoring purchases, gun sales are difficult to track because they appear on statements at sporting goods or retail shop purchases. Big box retailers like Walmart, they're not selling guns or ammunition anymore. They have on their receipts, their code just says variety. They sell groceries, pet supplies, and everything else. Dick's Sporting Goods imposed restrictions on their gun sales. And a former FBI counterterrorism prosecutor and staff member of the FBI 9/11 Review Commission insist this is easy to fix. They have the infrastructure already in place. All they have to do to deal with suspicious activity is use that infrastructure, just be tweaking it to consider firearm-related information. Information is the key word here. Information. Your information. Now, there are measures in place. For instance, bank have to report every time a single person makes a transaction over $10,000. That transaction could be totally legal. Banks have to report the transaction. At over $5,000, they have to report it if they suspect suspicious activity. There are also laws that restrict gun purchases under the Gun Control Act of 1968. Firearm dealers must report if someone buys two or more handguns in the span of five business days. There's also a lot of official blowback from the idea that banks will monitor all of our purchases now, effectively compiling a list of gun owners. Last year, John Kennedy, a Republican senator from Louisiana, introduced the new No Red or Blue Banks Act. The bill would prohibit the federal government from giving contracts to banks that discriminate against lawful business based solely on social policy considerations. Even the ACLU has come out against the monitoring of the banks. Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst for ACLU. The implication of expecting the government to detect and prevent every mass shooting is believing government should play an enormously intrusive role in the American life. Which brings us back to Andrew Ross Sorkin's New York Times article. He doesn't seem convinced by any of this. In fact, this week in the New York Times, he is taking credit for Walmart. And he said, we have just begun this fight. He prefers government stepping in and forcing these companies to start monitoring their customers, you. Or at least the credit card companies made that choice of their own volition. So government doesn't have to. We just really think that they should. Here he is in an interview on PBS.
So right now, legally, you decide you're going to send $10,000 anywhere. That gets reported to the government.
Instantly.
Instantly. Already does.
So we could instantly have reported this person just stockpiled $40,000 worth of weapons and grenades.
Absolutely.
Okay. He makes a valid point, or at least starts to, but it's what he says next. He takes it into a strange direction here.
And by the way, the credit card industry has on its own volition decided that there's certain things they don't want to finance. So if you want to buy Bitcoin, you can't. Marijuana in many states is legal. You can't. MasterCard, interestingly, recently went to a website that had some hate speech on it and said, we're no longer going to allow you to use credit card transactions using MasterCard because of this hate speech. So there are companies that are taking positions, if you will, on some of these things. And the question is how that can work in relation to guns.
So he starts by saying it's bad that credit card companies infringe on people's rights in other situations. You know, people purchase marijuana or punish websites for hate speech. It's bad. That should be the end of his point, full stop, but it's not. He goes on then by saying, why can't we do that in relation to guns? His article quotes a number of experts who are more or less just repeating a version of the same thing. Credit card companies should bear responsibility for mass shootings. More importantly, he just assumes that the connection does exist. But is there a connection between credit card companies and mass shootings? Or is it spurious?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Welcome to the program, sir.
Do I have to do the rumba here?
Yeah, you do.
What kind of music is that?
That's Bill O'Reilly. He's here. It's going to be a zany, crazy, and there will be some dancing as well.
I'm ready to do the Macarena whenever
okay.
you want.
Okay. Bill, let's start with the... the never-ending town hall meeting on CNN.
Still going on.
Still
going. Yeah. They've now got animated cartoon characters weighing in on what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a telethon over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think Jerry Lewis is going to appear, but he may.
You're a guy who looks at the ratings. I'm dying to know what the ratings for that thing were.
This is the irony of it. They were bad, and they were outrated by the hurricane.
And there's nothing really...
There's blame in the global warming, blaming the hurricane on the global warming, with, of course, no data or facts to back that up.
It's crazy.
And then people are going, you know what, I think I'll just watch the real hurricane, not you. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. CNN did about a little bit more than a million. It's a little bit better than they usually do, because, you know, they usually don't do anybody. Okay, so let's do the headlines. First of all, I do believe there is a warming on the planet because I can read the thermometers and the temperatures that come in from around the world. I also went up to Glacier Bay in Alaska, and I talked to the marine biologist up there. He said they've lost half the glacier up there. I also used to play ice hockey on Long Island for 2 months outside during the winter on a pond that was frozen. Last winter, not one day could you do that. So the temperature is changing. Now you go into, well, can human beings do anything about it? Well, certainly we can all be cleaner. I mean, it breaks my heart because, as you know, I'm a big ocean guy, that there's so much gunk in the ocean and plastics. I can't figure out why laser technology hasn't been able to just disintegrate these plastic stuff after we use it. I don't know why that hasn't happened. but the plastic stuff is winding up in the oceans. It's awful. So I'm not some guy who goes, oh, there's no global warming. This is God doing this. I'm not. All right. I do believe that the planet has been impacted by bad things from human beings. Okay. Now we have a bunch of totalitarian Stalinists, and that's exactly who they are, that are saying to the American people, unless you do what we tell you to do in every aspect of your life, the planet and the world are going to end in 10 years, 15 years, maybe 20. So you got to do what we tell you to do. And then the litany of stuff starts. And you, Beck, rightly were pithy and said, they want to take all your freedoms away. Freedom of choice, freedom of how you live your life, and the central government in Washington, D.C. is going to tell you exactly what you eat, where you go, how you get there, and how the jobs are doled out, all under the guise of saving you from global warming. There it is.
So, do the American people connect with this, Bill?
I don't know whether people pay attention enough to see Elizabeth Warren, a very dangerous woman, and Bernie Sanders are basically saying, they're saying, we're going to take as much money as we can from every American worker and give it to other people because global warming impacts the minority communities the most. That's the latest. You saw that, right?
Yes.
Okay. So this guy who wrote this book, this professor at American University, says, hey, global warming impacts people of color because more people of color live in the Southern Hemisphere, and that's where global warming is worse. So if you don't fight it, you're a racist. That's the latest.
Well,
the book is out.
Right.
Some people actually bought it.
But hold
on. Okay? So every time you put gas in your car, get on an airplane, you're a racist. You're a racist because that's exacerbating global warming. So this is how insane it's gotten. Now, your question is, do most Americans know it's insane? I would say no, because the media, the national media, particularly on television, all right, doesn't point any of this out. You can only hear it on the O'Reilly Update, on BillO'Reilly.com, on The Blaze, on the Glenn Beck Radio Show. That's where you're going to hear it. Not going to see it in the New York Times or hear it on NBC News. So they suppress, I love that word, suppress the real thing that's going on with the global warming. It is a power play. That's what it is.
So, you know, you were saying that if you gas up your car, it's racist. Bernie Sanders was talking about aborting poor children from third world countries, most likely not white. Paying
you know,
for
I didn't
the...
read it that way.
What?
I have to say, I didn't read it that Bernie Sanders wants to kill minority children.
What is he saying?
This is how I read it. Mm-hmm. And remember, Bernie Sanders is 112 years old. So a lot of times it doesn't come out very clear. It's kind of like Biden. So what I heard him say, what I think he said was, if you can ram birth control down more women's throats, it's better for the.
Yeah, that's very much what Margaret Sanger said, too.
Yes. And we know the eugenics of Margaret Sanger.
Right.
But here's another thing for you global warming fans out there. And I understand a new sports franchise in San Francisco is going to be called the Climate Changers. Okay, so it's going to be great out there.
Shut up.
Here's something else. So if Sanders or Warren are elected president, which they won't be, but if they were, all right, then we would have all these draconian changes to our economy and lifestyles in the pursuit of saving us from destruction. Do you think that Russia is going to not use fossil fuels when its entire economy is based on oil? Mm-hmm. How about China with 1.5 billion people, all right, many of whom are living from day to day? Are they going to knock out all the fossil fuels over in China? How about India? You know, are they going to do that? I don't think so. Japan. Japan still is massacring whales. We can't even get them to stop killing the whales over there. All right? They're going to stop with the fossil fuels over there? I don't think so. Okay, so we, United States and Sweden, all right, we're gonna go back and live in the 19th century. All right, we're gonna have campfires. Maybe we can't even have them. Well, maybe campfires are not going to be well. All right. And then everybody else is going to go, oh, look at these Americans. They destroyed their own economy. They blew up their own lifestyle. All right. They're all on horseback again. I mean, this is so absurd. This is like a Saturday Night Live skit when that show used to be funny, which was like 30 years ago. All right. Did I cover everything?
I think you covered everything. I want to take you now to the gun debate, but let me break for 1 minute so we have lots of time on the other side to talk about what's happening with the gun debate and your take on Walmart and this article that we have not heard Trump speak about, but we have had from the administration, a leak in the administration, on something that they are looking at and considering on how to make sure the guns don't get in the hands of bad guys. So this week, San Francisco has designated the NRA as a terrorist organization. You want to talk about dividing the country? That's calling half of the country terrorists or financing a terrorist organization. That seems a little divisive. But also, we have Walmart, who has decided that they are going to take a stand against guns and ammunition, something they have a right to do. But, Bill, how do you feel about it?
The momentum in America, and Republicans need to understand this, is for more stringent regulation of heavy weapons. All right. So I don't know what Walmart does or doesn't do, and I don't really particularly care. You pointed out they have a right to do whatever they want, and if you don't want to shop at Walmart anymore, don't. But the bigger issue for the country is that President Trump knows he's got to do something to appear to be concerned about these mass murders. Now, I'm not saying he's not concerned. But if the Republicans and Mitch McConnell in the Senate don't do anything, they're going to lose the Senate and the House next time around because the Democrats are going to run wild with this issue. So the Republicans have to back some kind of more focused, I think that's the best word, more focused legislation on keeping these high-powered guns out of the hands of nuts.
Okay,
now,
so wait, so hang
is
on.
Is it going to work?
No.
Right. I think everybody understands that mass murder will always be with us.
Right, and hang on just
and
a
that
second.
Most criminals can get guns illegally. I think everybody got that.
These weapons of war, they're called weapons of war because America first really started noticing them during Vietnam. But they were invented as a modern sporting rifle. That's what they're called, modern sporting rifles. They'd been around since the 1950s. We had them through the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and today. There's no difference. We have had these. There's not a problem with the gun. There's a problem with humanity. Something is missing
in
our society.
Remember, there was a federal assault weapons ban.
That did nothing. That did nothing.
But it was there, and it passed. I think that the Republican Party, if it wants to fend off this amazingly destructive wave of far-left ideology, has to compromise in the gun area.
In what way? What do we do? What do we do without violating?
I think is doable.
Which?
That gives individual Americans a little bit more power to go and say, you know, Lenny over there is shooting dachshunds.
Wait. So that's fine, except the president wants to have you guilty until proven innocent. You cannot take a gun away from somebody unless, I mean, we already have the red flag.
You
if
can.
You think somebody is sick, you go to a hospital
Beck,
you got to commit this person.
Beck.
Yes.
It's somebody on the streets of New York, all right, is running around naked, screaming obscenities The authorities show up and take that person to Bellevue, where they're placed under observation for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If the doctors examining the person then feel the person is a threat, they go to a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge writes an order detaining the person.
Okay. So you're making my point. Why do you need a red flag law? You have that. You can do that now.
No, you don't have it because this is private behavior. The red flag law would be spotlighting,
so,
not public behavior.
So if I have, imagine somebody who's had an ugly divorce, okay? Say I had
divorce. Of course there's the potential for abuse. I mean, everybody knows
Huge potential.
But if you're a mother and you have a 20-year-old big strapping guy in the basement with 15 ARs, and this kid, this 20-year-old, and the mother knows, is crazy, then the mother now has a way to alert the authorities without the kid coming up and beating the hell out of the mother. You can do it under the cloak of anonymity, and the authorities are compelled then to come to the house and look at the kid or pick him up someplace else. So I'm just saying to you, I understand the downside of all of these laws, but I know the political climate in the country. And Americans want something to be done, even if that something does not work.
I think, you know what? I think
crazy.
I think it's crazy, but completely right.
I do too.
People say this all the time. It's like, well, you know, you guys only care about the NRA and you only care about the politics of this. The politics of the gun issue suck for Republicans, I think. I mean, the easiest thing in the world is to give ground on all this stuff. It's you feel terrible defending it. You're in the middle of a tragedy trying to come up with these, factual points when no one wants to think about facts. They want to think about emotion. It's that moment. But I mean, that is why
an emotional issue, and the Republican Party and traditional Americans and gun owners have to look at the greater good here.
I'm not giving up my constitutional rights because of emotion, Bill. I feel like that's the problem.
But you don't have a constitutional right to own a certain weapon. Have a right
shall
to
shall not be infringed.
It's pretty clear.
Shall not be infringed.
The government, under the public safety banner, has the right to say you can't have a bazooka. We all know that. So it's just, I'm not,
no,
by
we've
the
all
way,
accepted
I wouldn't
that.
Ban ARs. I'm not for that. Mm-hmm. What I am for is if you want to buy a heavy weapon or a weapon of war, as Beck puts it, you have to go through a more stringent process so that the you're trained, the people are confident that you're not a loon, the check shows that you don't have four felonies on your sheet. You know, that kind of a thing. And that's reasonable.
We already have that. The only thing we
don't have it on a federal level. It's not a database. The FBI doesn't have a database of people who own weapons of war. They don't.
I don't want them to have one.
I know you don't.
Right. And I don't want them. I also don't want them in my psychiatrist office. If I take Prozac, am I now going to at some point be deemed unstable?
No, your medical records would not be subject to scrutiny when you buy a firearm.
Well, then how are you suggesting that we know that this person is unstable or not?
Because the red flag law would then put the person in some kind of observational capacity where there would be people that were talking to the person. It's not going to work. It's not a foolproof thing. I'm just telling you that if the Republicans continue to say nothing, we're not going to do anything, all right, they're going to lose the Senate. They lose the Senate, and they lose the House, and Trump loses the election. I'm going to be looking at Swiss properties because these people are relentless. Talk about losing your freedom. Can you imagine if Elizabeth Warren is elected president? My God, we're not going to have any freedom at all. That's what socialism is. Because you got to look at the big picture here, and the big picture is frightening, and that's why Trump is meeting with Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. Trump wants to have some kind of something so he doesn't get his butt kicked.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Kevin Hart, who was in a really bad car accident. He's got a, you know, he has a souped-up Barracuda, like 1970 or 68 Barracuda, and that thing went off the road, I think flipped, took the roof right off, broke the glass. The driver is in the hospital for back problems. The driver's wife is okay. And Kevin Hart walked away from the scene. But it was weird. Here's the 911 audio of the eyewitness. Let me just hear this here first.
Sounds like the passenger's stuck in the car. The driver is out of the car, but he looks a little hurt. I think the top of the car is crushed.
How many people are stuck inside, do you know?
I think it's just one lady now. The driver's out right now. They're trying to get the passenger out.
Just hit over the hospital quick.
Okay, so there were only the two people in while this guy is describing it, because Kevin Hart lived down the street and he walked home. He left the scene and walked home. Now, this is the 911 call from Kevin Hart's wife after he is home for a while. And listen to how calm she is and what she's saying. It just doesn't make sense. Listen to this.
He was in a car accident earlier tonight, or what happened?
Yes, earlier tonight. I don't know what happened. He's not coherent at all.
Did he get treatment originally from when he was injured? Did he go to the hospital, or?
No treatment at all. We're just here, and he can't move.
Is there any obvious broken bones that you can tell? You see anything broken?
Just something on his back is pulling out on his spine.
Holy cow. Now, why? Why did he walk away? And, you know, there's lots of reasons for this. And, you know, some not good and some perfectly reasonable, I think. You know, he's maybe in shock at first and he thinks he's okay and he walks home, but he isn't moving. He's not responding. And there's something sticking out of his spine. Wow.
Pretty relaxed handling of a moment like that.
Yeah, really. Really relaxed.
Yeah, it's a very strange story. Is he going to be okay? Do we know like what the outlook
is?
I guess
he's going to be okay.
Big back problems, right?
Yeah, but he's going to live and he's going to work again, and I'm glad for all of that. I like him. I think he seems like a nice, normal guy. You know, he's a guy who kind of came up with a tough upbringing and busted his butt. I think he's from Philadelphia, isn't he?
I think he is. Yeah. I think you're right.
And, right. You know, coming out of Philadelphia in some of those sections is not easy. And he's risen and he's, from all accounts, a really nice guy. And
except for his four tweets. His jokes,
yeah, those
makes
four
him a
tweets,
horrible person.
Horrible human. Can you believe that people were coming after him this week? He's in the hospital.
Yeah. Well,
they're coming after him again. This
it's
week.
Unreal. Did you see the Drew Brees thing? I know you're a huge. You know exactly who Drew Brees is, obviously.
Sure, baseball player.
Yeah, he probably played baseball at some point in his
right.
life. New Orleans Saints quarterback, of course. Did a spot for was it Focus on the Family,
mm-hmm.
where he was just helping like a 20-second promo. Hey, it's bring your Bible to school day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Focus on the Family. They're an anti-gay organization. Why is Drew Brees promoting an anti-gay organization? And so all these people came out, and then Drew Brees is forced to come out and say, "Look, I'm not saying I agree with all their views, and I was just trying to help kids." And like, this is a guy.
Everybody should help kid people. You know, Ilhan Omar and some of her cohorts in Congress, they also support the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's an anti-gay organization. So you want to figure out that? You go ahead, then come talk to me.
Ilhan's been tweeting about you, by the way. We should probably get into that at some point today.
Yeah.
Ilhan Omar, anti-Glenn Beck tweets now.
Yes.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Dave Rubin's journey from a left-leaning progressive to a free-thinking classical liberal has been quite a journey. And We've been watching it now for years, and Dave and I have become friends, and I just hosted his podcast this week as he came back from a month away from all media, all devices, all electronics, all news. He is totally refreshed and has real perspective. We announced this week that Dave is joining the Blaze TV lineup, and what we're trying to do is make sure that we have some shelter from the storm, and we are only going to be strong if each of us are strong as individuals, so nobody's carrying the other, and we're each strong as independent people and broadcasters or podcasters. And then we also come together under an umbrella so we can fight together as well. So Dave is keeping everything that he is before. If you're a subscriber of Dave's, you still get everything you have ever had and nothing changes for you. But if you're a Blaze subscriber, blazetv.com, you will now get in the lineup, the Rubin Report, and you get it early, just like everybody else. And the whole archives will be moving over soon. So we have blazetv.com/Dave, and you'll save $20 if you subscribe now and become a fan of the Rubin Report on Blaze TV. Welcome, Dave Rubin. How are you?
Glenn, it's good to be with you. I officially handed the hard drive over to your people to be taken to Texas and uploaded. So the deal is on.
You know, I tell you, Dave, it's so funny because we announced this because they've been working on the contract for a while and going back and forth, and with you in, you know, wherever you were, Botswana, it wasn't real easy to be able to get, you know, a contract done with you. So we did it on a handshake before we announced it. And like that. I like the idea that two people can come together and just look each other in the eye and just say, look, I know the attorneys have a lot of work to do, but we're not going to screw you. You're not going to screw us. Let's just be cool about this. And I love that.
Yeah, well, I love it, too. And quite literally, I mean, 5 seconds before we did that live stream on my channel, we knew we were getting close. But, you know, I wanted to announce it, and we knew a lot of eyeballs would be on us. And I just put my hand out. And you put your hand out, and I knew we would be good. And, you know, within 24 hours, the lawyers took care of all the little legal stuff that, you know, you and I don't want to really think about. But it's kind of funny. So I did do this 33 days off the grid. And the only thing that I did was every now and again, I had to jump on the phone with my lawyer to talk to the Blaze lawyers. And I thought that's really something. You try to escape the grid for 33 days. And the only communication you have with the outside world is with a lawyer. I may have done something slightly wrong.
Yeah, there, I think you know? So. I think so. Dave, let me ask you a question. I did Bridget Phetasy. Yeah. I did Bridget Phetasy's podcast last week. I did Stephen Kent. He just did Beltway Banthas, which is a great. I don't know if you've ever heard it. I love the way he talks about politics. No. He puts it all in with Star Wars. And then I did yours. And everybody always starts their podcast with, look, I know a lot of my listeners are, you know, they might hate this guy, but I think you're going to be really surprised. And I always am bashed by everybody. However, whenever I have you guys on, anybody, even on the left on my show, I rarely see people bashed. I have yet to see maybe five in my career people saying, if you have this person on, I'm no longer a subscriber of yours. There's a difference between this audience. Why can't we all just start to look at each other and go, hey, I don't agree with everything that Dave Rubin says or Glenn Beck says, but I'm glad everybody's talking.
Sure. Well, look, if I do anything for you in the course of this partnership, hopefully it'll be that whatever remaining lefties are sane and willing to talk, or the few liberals scattered throughout the galaxy that are willing to do that, hopefully I'll get them to say, you know, you don't have to give Glenn the intro where you, you know, you say, oh, I don't agree with everything he says, or the rest of it, because nobody agrees with everybody, you know, so anyone else on literally anything. And, you know, you can find clips where I thought something different, you know, 2 years ago or 4 years ago, and evolving is really what it's all about. It doesn't mean abandoning your beliefs.
It's really great. In fact, that's what I love about you, your honesty. You were, I believe the first person that I found that was willing to be really honest about the mistakes that you made in your life and were honestly doing soul searching, not for, I mean, in fact, against any kind of business rule and business sense. You were honest enough to say, look, correct me if I'm wrong, but Bridget Phetasy says they were factory settings in her that were just set to liberal. Yeah. Were they factory settings with you that were set to liberal?
Yeah, well, I think those factory settings, meaning that when you grow up, if you grow up basically in the secular world, which most of us in America mostly do, that the factory settings, the ideas that are going to be thought of as the okay ideas, the ideas that you can talk about without being labeled a racist or a bigot or the rest of it, they basically are ideas of the left, that, you know, the government can kind of fix everything and we should take from some and give to the others. And, you know, the litany of specific issues goes all the way down the line. And when I, you know, as I was a progressive, I was on the Young Turks, which is a pretty far left network. I always had true liberal roots, and I come from a truly liberal family in the best sense of liberalism, like a JFK liberalism or Daniel Patrick Moynihan or Ed Koch liberalism, which, you know, someone on the right might have some issues with, but usually find a conversation with people like that.
Yes.
Okay. Now, ironically, the three men I just mentioned, all once great politicians, they're all dead because there's very few of these liberals remaining. And you can see that just with who the Democrats are putting up now. But, you know, when you wake up out of that and you start asking questions, it's not that the specific issues change so quickly as you will be shocked where suddenly you will find friends and more importantly, how quickly the left will purge you out. So it's interesting what you said about your audience. When you bring on a lefty, your audience is completely okay with it. But when you go on a more lefty show that they have to, you know, qualify it and quantify it and warn everybody. And I find the same thing, which is actually hilarious. So when I bring on someone from the right, you know, the lefties go completely insane. If I, you know, even when I had you on the other day, I glanced through the comments quickly, which no one in their right mind should do. And a lot of people very upset that I had Glenn Beck on. When I bring on someone from the left, so even just in the last, you know, 2 months, I've had Marianne Williamson on, I've had Andrew Yang on, I've had plenty of lefties on. Generally, I would say something like 90% of the comments from the people on the right are basically like, you know, I disagree with these ideas, or Marianne Williamson is a little kooky, or I'm not down with UBI, universal basic income, with like Andrew Yang, but it was nice to hear the conversation.
Right.
And that in essence is the divide that we have in America right now. And that's why I keep saying that on the say center right, you know, anywhere from conservative to libertarian, there is such a richness right now. And that's the place that I'm interested in exploring. That's why I wanted to do this partnership with you. And that's why I'm so psyched for the next year, which is obviously going to be pretty bananas. There's an election.
Yeah, it is. Let me talk to you about Hollywood. I was only out there for a couple of days, Dave, and I saw a difference in almost everybody that I met with. And here's the difference. People who would never, never have voted for a Republican ever, and certainly never for Donald Trump, from big funders of the Democratic Party, big supporters, people who are lifelong Democrats, they have all said, if it is anyone besides Biden, I'm voting for Trump.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I live here in Los Angeles. It's quite a bubble. I'm happy to say that you and I were able to go out in Beverly Hills and nobody assaulted us. Actually, we got a couple smiles. That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
There is a shift. And the shift has, in a weird way, has less to do with what's happening on the right and more to do with how hysterical the left has become.
Yes.
And the idea that they've brought out Biden, who clearly does not want to do this and may not have the mental capacity or energy to do this at his age. And he's fumbling and bumbling through a lot of stuff. And he didn't run when Obama, you know, finished up his two terms. So that kind of makes you think he didn't really want to do this. But they brought him out as the last vestige, the last effort to stop the Democratic Socialist Movement. And that is what's coming. And guess what? They're going to drop the word Democratic pretty quick. I mean, they're holding on to that right now. But if you watched any of this climate change summit that they did, I mean,
Holy cow. Things
that they were saying, it was insane. I mean, Bernie Sanders was basically saying that unless we fund abortions in other countries in South America, that's going to affect climate change. I mean, the policies are actually ridiculous if you listen to them. However, the factory settings of the way the media translates all of this for you, the average person that that's just out there that has a job and has a family and can only devote so much time to this, they have trouble translating what all of that means. And I think the job for people like us over the next year, in a world that's getting more and more fractured for your time, it's going to be for us to be as efficient as possible in getting the most important stuff across, because otherwise, the more we get split, you know, the harder it'll be to get truth out of anything.
Right. And that is one reason why, Dave, we have to stand together with people who have like principles. If you believe in the Bill of Rights, you're good. You're good. I'll stand with you. If you want to overturn the Bill of Rights, then we have problems. But we all speak different languages. We all speak to a different audience. The Uber left has broken us all apart and successfully made it so no one can talk to each other. And if we who are of like mind on the Bill of Rights can't come together, We're going to be destroyed. We must stand together so you can have a movement where you can say, no, look, I disagree with that person over there on this, this, and this, but they're making a very important point. So we have a broader ground. Right now, the mass media has that broad ground, but we're all separated from each other. We've got to link arms.
Well, you said something really interesting to me on the live stream a couple of days ago, which you were telling me which Democratic candidates had dropped out and who's staying and all that. And you mentioned that Tulsi Gabbard is no longer, she hasn't dropped out, but they're not going to have her in the debates now. And I thought you said something interesting, which was that you disagree with her on almost all of her policy prescriptions, but you believe that she loves the country. And that is where you want to be in a pluralistic country where there's over 300 million people in this country. Mm-hmm. And I do not want all of the people to agree with me, even if I am right
Amen.
About everything. I'm pretty sure I'm not. But even if I was, I would not want that, because we need a healthy tension in a political debate to always keep us on check. And that's why it's so disappointing that Tulsi, it looks like she'll eventually have to drop, because once they give you the signal that you're not in the debate, you know, you're pretty much toast. But we need more voices like that. And that's why I wanted to do this deal with The Blaze, because, you know, we haven't even discussed big tech, but there's so many forces circling the wagons around us. And I knew that partnering with you and The Blaze and what you guys have built, and that's still my ability to remain independent. As I said on the live stream, you're not my boss. I might be your boss. We're still looking into that one.
It was a rather fast contract.
That was why I shook your hand so quick.
Yeah, right.
I did there. It was pretty clever.
Dave, hang on just a second. Hang on. I have to take a break. Hang on just a second, because I want to continue our conversation, because Dave said something to me during the podcast that I did on his show that I thought was fascinating that we didn't explore more with Dave Rubin, now part of the Blaze TV lineup. Dave Rubin, sign up now.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.